Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, March 7th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to have a spoiler-filled conversation about the new movie, Ricky Stenicki. And later, we're going to be presenting an interview with co-writer and director Peter Farrelly. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, let's get into it. You're our resident comedy guy, as Peter used to be fond of referring to you. And what did you think about this movie?
I liked it for the most part. It has a vibe of a comedy that it feels like studios don't really make anymore, and that's mostly because studios aren't making a lot of comedies anymore. But it has a feeling of a comedy that would have come out basically around the time that the Farrelly brothers were like making their big hit comedies. You know, like There's Something About Mary and Me, Myself, and Irene and whatnot. Maybe like somewhere around like the early to mid 2000s. I feel like this feels like it would have landed and fit really nicely into it. And some of that is because the script actually has been in development for a long time. It's gone through several iterations and several different filmmakers. And I think it's pretty funny. John Cena is particularly fantastic in it. If there's one shortcoming I have that was kind of frustrating to me, is I feel like they tried to pack a little bit too much of an emotional punch into the third act, and it all feels kind of rushed and somewhat unearned because it kind of comes out of nowhere and it feels like it gets a little too serious. And I don't mind when like you have investment in the characters and they do manage to like fit a little bit heart into comedies like this, but for whatever reason it just didn't feel like it quite fit in at the very end of the story, and kind of just felt like there should have been a little bit more proper like establishment of, you know, trying to lead into that rather than having it all happen there in the third act. And there are some teases, especially when it comes to Zac Efron's part, but like you don't know where it's going until the end, and it doesn't quite feel like it's meant to set up like a serious thing. Like it almost felt like it was initially like setting up some kind of like joke that was coming later, and maybe that's part of the idea, but yeah, otherwise I mostly enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't like this movie quite as much. And I think the reason is kind of what you were just alluding to there. And it's like, I think I don't really believe that these characters would have these reactions, which is a weird thing to say. But like, because the movie goes from this really heightened broad comedy and shifts so forcefully into something that is supposed to be more heartfelt, you know, if they stayed in that heightened comedy mode the whole time, I feel like I would have been able to buy a little bit more of what was going on. But like the idea that the wife characters or the partner characters that these main guys in this movie would just kind of like understand, and we're in full spoiler territory for this movie, by the way, just to underline that for listeners, would like realize that they had been lying about this Ricky Stenicki thing for the entire time. And then like, that's their reaction. Like one guy has to sleep in his yard for 6 months or whatever it is, like camp outside. It just seemed like their reactions would have been so much more stronger than they actually were in this movie. Which like, I don't know. I mean, I guess there are probably going to be people who are like turn your brain off. You're picking apart a comedy. Like, it's not supposed to work on that kind of level of logic or whatever. But I felt like the tonal shifts encouraged me to think about these characters as real people in a way instead of just caricatures. And if they, it almost, I feel like, would have been a better movie if they had not tried to put that kind of heart kind of stuff into it. I don't know. Does that make sense to you at all, Brad?
No, for sure. And I do think that there are times when adding that level of emotion and like giving the characters a sense of being more grounded in reality can hurt the comedy. And I do think that that happened a little bit here for sure.
I also thought the pacing of the movie seemed way off at the start. Like, I actually thought it got a lot better in that regard as it went along. But for the first few scenes, it kind of seemed like characters would just pause after what the filmmakers thought were laugh lines to give the audience to catch their like time to catch their breath after cracking up, presumably cracking up so hard. I don't know if you clocked that at all. But Peter Farrelly, I know, like, obviously comes from a more old school theatrical model of making studio comedies and stuff. And like, maybe that actually, you know, many of his previous movies actually did earn those kind of laugh breaks, but this one just didn't clear that bar for me personally. But maybe that's a good transition into, like, I guess what you thought of like the comedy versus the drama in this movie. So like, or maybe just like the jokes versus the story, if you want to put it that way. What did you make of the jokes and like the comedic aspects of this film?
So I like the comedy in this for the most part. It has an old school vibe to it. And like John Cena is really funny in this role. Just the way that he plays such like a scumbag, like loser is so good. Like he looks so gross when he arrives at the airport and is throwing up into the trash can and pisses himself and everything. And then, you know, like just the way he shifts into it and like is actually like a really good actor and like knowing what he needs to do to like fit into this fake role of Ricky Stenicki and staying super dedicated to it. There's a lot of really fun stuff that they mine from that. I do wish that there was a little better comedic chemistry between the three friends. You know, I think that Zac Efron can be funny, but he needs a strong comedic lead to bounce off of, I think. Mm-hmm. And even though Andrew Santino and Jermaine Fowler are both funny and they're both stand-up comedians and everything, I just didn't the chemistry wasn't quite there for me. Like they had a decent enough camaraderie, but there was something about them that didn't entirely jive together comedically. And I wish that it felt like they were more like friends. It's the kind of thing I miss, like, whenever, you know, Adam McKay did a movie, like his cast all felt like they were friends who hung out together. Or whenever Judd Apatow did a movie, you know, like Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill and Jason Segel and David Krumholtz and Martin Starr and all those people, like they were all really friends. And so when they were together, like there was this like genuine, you know, connection between them. And that's mm-hmm. really hard to like replicate in a comedy. And so I didn't feel like they quite got there in this one.
Yeah, 100%. You took the words right out of my mouth. I think that's like incredibly well said. And that really is like, you need that so much in a movie that relies on a core story about these guys who have been friends for 20 plus years or whatever. Like you have to have that sense of believability, even in a heightened scenario. You just have to, that comedy just, or that charisma, that sort of relationship between those guys just like absolutely has to be there. And it just, it felt a little lacking there. Yeah.
I do think Andrew Santino is funny though, because Andrew Santino has this really great way of saying things sarcastically and like chastisingly that is just really like has some teeth to it. That's one of the things that makes him so great on that FX series Dave too, if you haven't watched that.
Okay, no, I haven't. I kind of thought, like, you know, story-wise, when a comedy is this predictable in terms of like, oh, I know what this beat is going to be, I know exactly what is going to happen next, it's tough to be surprised, which is obviously like a pretty essential part of comedy, like the entire, you know, foundation of what a comedy is. So what did you think about the story aspect of this movie?
Yeah, you know, the story didn't really go in any surprising places. I think the most surprising thing was learning, you know, that Zac Efron's wife had actually found out about what was going on and knew the entire time, but it didn't wasn't necessarily like a pleasant surprise. Like it was like, oh, okay, all right, I guess. You know, I think the one thing that I was maybe surprised by, and I just appreciated how it went comedically, was the whole bit with William H. Macy's character figuring out that he's just like making it looks like he's jerking off dicks, like yeah. whatever he's doing. But like, that was a solid bit that they did.
Yeah, and I thought Macy seemed like he was game, you know, in this yeah. movie. Like he doesn't do anything that's going to like redefine how you think of him as an actor or anything. But I just thought he seemed to be having fun, and like maybe it was just his character is a little bit better written because he's just the supporting player and doesn't really have. You know, a huge arc to undergo or anything like that, but it seemed like he was able to sort of like let loose and have fun a little bit. So I appreciated him in there.
Yeah, for sure.
So I guess we've talked about most of the performances already. The history of this well, actually, before we get into that, you mentioned something earlier that I just like was flagging in my brain, like the idea that this kind of feels like it could have been released around the same time as There's Something About Mary and some of the other Farrelly Brothers movies. I wonder, like, is there a difference in your mind between a throwback and a type of movie that could have been released in that period? Like, is there a distinction there between those two things? Because I was kind of thinking that, like, this felt more like, yes, more like a movie that literally could have been made back then instead of, you know, sometimes we see things that feel more modern but have, like, that are more reminiscent of older things. And I just wonder if you know, as somebody who cares about comedy, draws that line when you think about stuff like this.
No, because like I think the difference is, and it's interesting that this is coming out not too long after Driveaway Dolls, which was in a similar situation where that's a movie that felt like it had throwback elements and was like digging back into the kind of movies they used to make back in the late 90s and we don't see very often anymore. And similar to Ricky Stenicki, that's because that script has been in development for so long that it still has elements of a movie that was written, you know, in the mid to late 90s. And Ricky Stenicki was one of those movies that was written, you know, over a decade ago and has been in development for so long. So it was made at a time, you know, when the comedy had like a little bit of a different vibe about it. And so they were still, you know, making comedies of this ilk. So I do think that there is a difference because like you can make a modern movie that has more contemporary sensibilities, but it has like elements of movies from, you know, decades before. Mm-hmm. But they're not necessarily entirely inhabiting the style of those movies from the past. It's just kind of like borrowing things that make it feel like that. Whereas Driveaway Dolls and Ricky Stenicki, I feel like both really do feel like movies that would have been made during that time because that's when they originally wanted to make them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the history of this project. One thing that I found kind of shocking is that I was going back and looking at like old Slash Film articles about the history of this movie, and I found two in our archives, one of which said that, I think this was around 2010 or so, that James Franco was in talks to play Ricky Stenicki at one point. And then another one said that Jim Carrey was in talks to play the Stenicki role. And I was just curious if you thought that this movie would have been, I don't know, if not better, then like maybe more interesting or like more XYZ, pick your adjective, with either of those guys in as that role instead of John Cena.
So if it was made during the time that like those stories came out, then like I could have seen it working. You know, obviously things have changed for James Franco quite dramatically yep. Since he was involved in. So I think if you made that movie with James Franco today, it'd be a little bit weird. But I could, knowing like what he can do both as an actor and comedically, I could easily see him playing this kind of character, someone who's just really like down on his luck, you know, just like a lovable loser, kind of similar to his character in Pineapple Express, but then also like turning it around and being this, you know, like handsome stand-up guy when he actually has to turn into Ricky Stenicki. I could easily see him pulling that off. If they had cast Jim Carrey, I feel like we would have gotten an entirely different movie, and Ricky Stenicki would have been a completely different character. I feel like it would have been like a kind of transformation thing where Jim Carrey's like his default character would have been one character, and then when he becomes Ricky Stenicki, it would have been completely different, like just a total transformation where like he puts on a whole different physical vibe and like maybe even changes his voice and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I actually asked Peter Farrelly about whether he had considered maybe going back to see if Jim Carrey would have been interested in doing this after they had kind of revamped the script and come back to it. And so you'll hear us talk about that when we run the interview.
Sweet. A couple things that your answer reminded me of. You mentioned the phrase down on his luck, and it reminded me of the moment where John Cena's character is trying to escape. I think he's wearing the... I want to say he's wearing that Britney Spears
yeah, yeah.
get up, and he's trying to escape out of the back of whatever the comedy club, and he makes it through the window and drops the bottle of, I don't know what it is, Jack Daniels or something.
Yeah.
And like just starts licking the cardboard where he landed. And it's like just so disgust, like viscerally disgusting. And I just thought that was like a really, really good example of like this character hitting rock bottom and like, you know, making you feel the desperation and sort of like, like just the terrible life that this guy must have. But then on the other end of that, like, him on stage as what was his name? Rod.
Rock Hard Rod.
Rock. Yes. How could I forget Rock Hard Rod? You know, I actually thought he was like pretty good at impersonating those the singers and stuff that he was doing. I kind of hated all the jokes around it. Like, I thought it was so excessive and just like not particularly my brand of comedy. But in terms of like the pure impression part of it, I thought Cena kind of killed that.
See, I love both, actually, because he is great at the musical impressions. I was surprised by how good he was at that. But I also like just the childish, gross nature of those jokes, because they are supposed to be, like, immature and childish. Like, as if you were a teenager writing just sexual parodies of rock songs. So, like, like it's the stupidest shit. But it's so funny to watch Cena, like, be so invested in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And his costume changes, I thought, were pretty good. That was like some of the best parts of the movie, just like from a visual perspective, and like the occasional cut to like, who are these people that would show up to a movie show and stuff. So some of that landed pretty well for me. So, okay, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and present your interview with Peter Farrelly. All right. So what do we need to know about your chat with Peter Farrelly, Brad? Anything? You alluded to your Jim Carrey discussion earlier. Anything else?
No, not really. You know, I talked to him about, you know, kind of just the general vibe around kind of like comedies in Hollywood right now, you know, because it's we've noticed over several years recently, you know, that studios aren't taking chances on big comedies. Comedies aren't tentpoles anymore like they were during the times of like that Adam McKay and Judd Apatow were releasing these big movies in theaters, you know, over the summer and making millions of dollars. You know, the only time we really get a full-fledged comedy in theaters anymore is if it's like paired with another genre, like it's an action comedy or it's a horror comedy or something like that. They're just like those studio comedies are few and far between. And so it was nice to talk to him about that too. And you know, as he answers, you know, some of it kind of just has to do with like the general vibe as far as like that a lot of comedians face right now of like being difficult of like facing the idea of saying something that might offend somebody and has the potential to get you, you know, quote unquote canceled. And that studios like they get letters all the time from people who are pissed off about stuff. And so like taking a chance on comedies, you know, these days comes with, you know, the not just the financial, you know, risk, but also like the risk of being lambasted, you know, online and getting letters from, you know, influencers and you know, soccer moms and all these people that would get pissed off about stuff. But like, but the one thing that I did appreciate though is like, he's not like bitter about it, because he said, he's like, I do want to, like, he specifically talks about how a lot of good has come from like the progressive stance we've had as far as like avoiding certain kinds of things in comedy and like making sure that people aren't punching down and whatnot. And he even mentions one of the things that he would change, you know, going back and making There's Something About Mary, because a lot of people, they talk about comedies like that and they're like, oh man, they would never make a movie like that today. And he specifically says, he's like, no, we could definitely make There's Something About Mary today. He's like, but the one thing I would definitely change is Mary's brother, you know, who is neurodivergent, I would make sure that that character was actually played by an actor who was part of that community, rather than having an actor actually play that, you know, and be comedic. And so it was nice to hear him kind of like be, you know, self-aware about that and also acknowledge, you know, that it's not, he didn't have this like curmudgeonly approach like, oh, you know, you can't make jokes anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
God, thank God. I mean, that's like always like the worst nightmare that I have when I'm interviewing anybody associated with comedy is just like, please don't be one of those people who just, you know, has that kind of bitter worldview because of these, you know, the social movements that have happened over the past few years. It's very nice to hear that at least he's like aware of that and sort of aware of the benefits that came with it while still like understandably wanting to protect the idea of comedy and like the ways that people can make other people laugh. So cool. All right. Well, yeah, here is Brad's conversation with Peter Farrelly.
It's great to talk to you. I had a blast with this movie. It feels like the kind of comedy that they're not really making too much anymore. Yeah. And so it's I was curious, you know, like this is your first feature comedy since Dumb and Dumber 2. Was it hard to get back into the groove of comedy, especially after taking on more dramatic movies over the past decade?
No, it wasn't. It was. I was glad to do it. It was fun. You know, it's a lot of fun making a movie like this. The other ones, it wasn't. It was. I mean, if anything, it was probably like better because I hadn't done comedy in so long. It was exciting to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, because this isn't like the kind of comedy we get much anymore, and studios aren't really making a lot of comedies these days, you know, as a producer, director, writer who's done a lot of movies like this, what is it that studios are looking for when taking a risk on comedies like this? And how frustrating has it been for you, somebody who made movies like this and it felt like you guys were churning them out like new cars for years?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Anybody in the comedy business, stand-up comedians, like, you know, they don't want to go to and it's, you know, people are afraid, you know, afraid to offend. And, you know, like stand-up comedians don't want to go to college campuses because they're afraid. And so I think that's why studios are afraid. I think it's a similar thing. They get letters and they're saying, oh, we can't make that, can't do this. But you got to remember, you're always going to offend somebody. And if you don't, it's going to be mush, you know, it really is. So you just have to like say, if your heart's in the right place and the character's heart's in the right place and you trust it, then you could defend it. Like, you know, and that's how I feel. Like I like these characters and I like who they, I think we get away with that kind of comedy with these guys.
Has that vibe, like that environment, kind of changed your overall approach, is how you approach comedies and like the kind of things you're writing?
I'm sure it has in some ways. But by the way, let me also say, you know, the whole PC movement and all these movements in the last 5-6 years are great. They've been important, but they also there's a point where you let's calm down here. Now, you know, I like that there's these changes and they've been awesome. But then doesn't mean you can't tell any more jokes. Like, you got to be able to have a little freedom as a human being to say stuff that you want to say. And but yeah, it definitely I'm more aware in good ways. I would say that. Like, if I did something about Mary today, if I would, and people say you can't make it today, it's absolutely you could make it today. Those people are, their hearts are in the right place. They come from the right place. What I would do differently, I would have had the brother Warren, I would have used an actor with an intellectual disability instead of an actor to do that. Even though, by the way, the actor in it was incredible. But there's too many actors out there with intellectual disabilities who don't get those opportunities. And I didn't know that at the time. I didn't realize they were there. And I've learned a lot since then about that, like, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Ricky Stinky was in the works for a while before you came along. Although there was even an iteration that had Jim Carrey attached for a while.
That's right.
Was there ever any desire from you to reach back out to Jim to see if he wanted to make it with you?
I wanted to do it with Jim when it was at, where was it? It was at Lionsgate years ago. And the script wasn't ready. You know, it didn't get ready until recently. And then in the last few years, you know, Jim's kind of stepped back and he says he's retired, but I know Jim will come back someday. I hope so. I would have made it with Jim. I would have been happy to make it with him then, but we couldn't get the movie made. So luckily we got it.
Speaking of the script, because you did a rewrite of the script, and I was curious what changed between the previous iteration and what you ended up ultimately putting in front of camera for this one.
I'm glad it didn't get made 10 years ago because it was a thinner script. It didn't have, like, it had the guys run around a lot of the same laughs, but it didn't have the depth that this has, which is basically, why are they lying? Well, why do people lie? They lie because some insecurity, or they're afraid, or to protect themselves. There's a million reasons. Well, we didn't care. We did that. Let's just tell the story. And I remember my wife reading it and saying, I don't like these guys. I was like, what do you mean? They're hilarious. She goes, yeah, but I don't like them, you know. And that's bad. And, you know, you got to like them. If you don't like them, there's no movie. And then we realize, okay, well, why are they lying? And we explain why. And not that that's forgivable, but it's understandable why they lie. It's not like, doesn't make it all okay, but it makes you understand it and maybe make it forgivable ultimately.
Yeah, honestly, this movie, I think, even more than your other comedies, it feels like you really dug a lot more into the characters and like the heart of the matter. Like there's some real genuine, I think, emotion in here, especially in the third act.
Yeah, it kind of, and that's all the new stuff, by the way. It was like, you know, basically before it was just a big broad comedy, these guys going on a thing and they get in trouble. And then and what we were looking for is like, the more we thought about it, well, why do they lie? And also we got the women way more involved. The women are pulling the strings in this thing, ultimately, as you learn by the end. You know, first of all, you see early on the mother-in-law is all over him. She's the one suspicious. But what we also learn is that, you know, his Aaron is also aware of what's happening. And those are things that the script just got better. And that's the stuff I'm most proud of, actually, in the script now.
Yeah. I think this might be John Cena's best performance, at least comedically.
He's incredible.
Yeah. In this day and age, it doesn't feel like we get any new Jim Carreys or Adam Sandlers or Ben Stillers, you know, at least not since like the Judd Apatow, Adam McKay kind of days. And having someone who looks like Cena and is as funny as Cena is even more rare. What is it about him that just works in roles like this?
He's really funny and talented and smart. I was like, I found him in Peacemaker, and someone called me, they said, have you seen Peacemaker? I said, no, they said, watch Peacemaker. The guy in Peacemaker is incredibly funny. And I was like, I knew of John Cena, but I had never seen him be that funny. And when I watched that, I was like, oh my God, this guy is like, he is like the real deal. This is like hilarious. So when I gave him the script, I was hoping he would do it, and he immediately wanted to, and he just committed to it because he's a very brave guy. He's, you know, not afraid to go for it.
Speaking of going for it, the performances he does for the Jizz Jams are hilarious. And he's actually surprisingly good at those musical impressions, too. I was wondering, why didn't we get to see the Britney Spears routine? And are there any others that didn't make the cut?
Well, Britney Spears was not... Okay, yeah, first of all, there were two others that we did that didn't make the cut. Because when I tested them, we had, like, so many of them. It got, like, okay, I get it. It got old. And you felt like, okay, we get the picture. He's singing about masturbation, you know. And it actually hurt the later ones. Like the one I love at the end is the Peter Frampton one. I love that one. And yet, if you have like two or three before that, it's okay, enough. So we did cut a couple of them. Britney, he never did a Britney thing. It was just him, like we gave, okay. We didn't cut anything. The idea was he had done a Britney thing, but we never saw what that was. And that was because I think her music was too expensive. couldn't afford it. But we did reach out to her, by the way, to her people and said, hey, we're doing this thing. Is she cool? Because I didn't want to, you know, make her upset about it. And she was happy. She was fine with it.
That's great.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, you guys used to shoot in Rhode Island all the time for movies, but this time you had to shoot in Australia.
Yeah.
How hard was it turning Australia into your, you know, normal like kind of location style?
Not that hard, actually. Like the houses and stuff are not that different. And then the downtown areas, you could, you know, and we were shot in Melbourne. Like there's a, it could be Providence. The hard part is the street. The car's on the other side of the road. And you have to flip them when you have that. And it's hard to find cars that drive on ours. I mean, the wheel is on our side. You know, they're all on the other side. Yeah. So you got to get those things. That's the hardest part. But, you know, Australians grow up watching a lot of American television. So they have great American accents. So the actors were fantastic. Like, you know, the guy, God, I wish I could remember his name. The guy who does the commercial in there, you know. That guy is just, he's like, I love that kid. He's a superstar, and I'm blanking on his name right now. But he came in red for us. I was like, are you kidding me? There's so much talent there. So we had a lot of local hires who were doing American accents.
Did that make it any harder to, because I know one of the other things that you and Bobby did previously was bring in a lot of your friends to have small roles in the movie. Were you still able to do that this time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have friends in. But more than that, I like just bringing friends on the set, because, especially people who haven't been there before, because, you know, the first time you walk on a movie set, you know, you're like, whoa, you know, it's just like that energy. And I want the crew to remember it. Because the crew, listen, I keep telling these guys, I've never been on a set for a minute where I wasn't pinching myself. I'm so happy to be on a set. But crews go from one to the other. They could work on 10 movies in a year, you know, eight movies. And it becomes old hat. And I want them to remember that feeling. And when people come to visit the set, and I love having people on the set because you could, the energy, it just, yeah. You feel and reminds everybody, lucky to be doing this. This is an amazing, you know, gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I wanted to ask about a couple upcoming projects that you have in the works.
Yeah.
First of all, what is the status of Kingpin 2? I am such a big fan of the original, and I was very surprised to hear that there was a sequel coming back together back in 2021, I think.
Yeah.
Can you give me any idea what the story might be? Is it a Lego sequel with the offspring of Woody Harrelson and Randy Quaid's characters, or will they be back as the leads?
It's a work in progress. We're not quite there yet. Like, we had developed it a little and it didn't quite go where we wanted to go. We don't want to do it unless it's going to be amazing. Like, you know, I don't want to do something like it would have been easy to do a lot of things, but I want it to be, you know, it worth doing. And we just got to get the script right. Honestly, everything, I always tell people, like, what's the hardest part of making a movie? The script. By far, not even close. Shooting a movie is just a joy, a pleasure. Editing, it's unbelievably fun. You're seeing it come together, all the pieces, laying music in. It's coming alive. It's joyful.
Yeah.
Writing it is hard. And I want to get it right. So we're still bouncing around ideas. We're not sure. But we are developing it, yes.
Fair enough. You also have Dear Santa coming up.
Yeah.
With Jack Black playing Satan, who accidentally receives a letter intended for Santa. What can we expect from that movie, especially Jack Black's performance? Are we talking about having a lot of devil makeup, or is it something like Bedazzled where he appears human?
No, he's got a little, he goes back and forth, but he's got a little devil stuff on him, but he's great. He's Jack Black at his Jack Blackiest, and he's really fun, and also Ben Stiller's in it. My brother directed it. And I wrote it with Ricky Blitt. And that's another one that's been around forever. Probably took 10 years to get right. And it turned out great. I'm looking forward to it. I've seen it. It's going to come out next Christmas.
That's awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah.
As I wrap up here, I'm curious, do you have any desire with, you know, you have Kingpin in the works, to revisit potentially any of the other, you know, characters from previous movies?
The thing I'm really focused on right now is I really want to do a couple more years of Loudermilk, our TV show, which has finally found an audience. You know, it was.
Yeah, I literally just had a friend who started watching it, and they were like blown away by how much they liked it.
It's fun. It's a fun show because we did it on the Audience Network, and they basically let us do whatever we wanted. And did I already tell you this, or did I tell someone else this?
No, I don't think you've told me this.
Okay, good. Because I told this story a couple times. Audience Network said they had no money, but they're like, we'll let you do whatever you want. And we did. And we had a ball. And we had a great cast. And we created something that I think is really good. And also has importance, which is it's about the 12-step program. And every time you see a show like that about a 12-step program, it's a bunch of sad sacks sitting around like, ooh. And it's not that. It's a lot of love in a room and friendship and laughs. And that's what we were trying to do. We were trying to keep it real, but yet have the laughter and the joy that those rooms bring, because they do bring joy. So I'm really proud of that. So I want to do a couple more years.
Awesome. I hope that gets to happen.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, they're giving me the light, so thank you so much, Peter, for taking the time to talk to me. It's great to speak with you.
Thank you. Real pleasure.
All right, any closing thoughts on Ricky Stenicki, Brad? Would you like, I guess now that we're at the end of the episode, would you recommend that people watch this movie? It's available right now on Amazon Prime Video. I should have said that at the start. I apologize. Any closing thoughts here?
I think it's just worth checking out. You know, it's. I do wish that it had been given a release in theater, because I do feel like it would be fun to, like, experience this one with a crowd. I really miss, you know, laughing in theaters with an audience. Some of my favorite theatrical memories
are just cracking up with a packed crowd in theaters. So I wish that this they would, you know, even just give it like a limited release for a little bit or something like that. But yeah, I think it's, you know, if you looking for something to watch new this weekend at home, then it's definitely worth checking out just to see John Cena in this role, because he really is fantastic.
Yeah, if nothing else, I hope this just keeps him rolling in terms of like continually being cast in comedies moving forward, because he seems like a very exciting voice in comedy, which is, yeah, as you mentioned, kind of like a dire genre right now in Hollywood. So if a guy like Cena can help like get things greenlit or whatever, I would love to see him continue to make stuff like this. So. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's show. You can find more about Ricky Sinicky at slashfilm.com. I will link to a couple things in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to our newsletter. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a ton. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.